music, entertainment, black culture. We're listening to.
And I'm counting every one of y'all until I get to a million.
What's good, everybody? I'm Trey.
It's your boy, Million.
And you have now tuned in to Listening to Millions.
This is deeper than a podcast. I'm telling y'all, y'all need to come sit down with us.
And today, we have a very special guest. William, do you mind introducing yourself?
My name is William Cooper. I'm the co-founder of United Market from Atlanta, Georgia. And yeah, I'm just happy to be here.
Yes, sir.
That's what's up, man. That's what's up.
How you doing today, man?
I'm doing great. How are y'all doing?
Pretty good. So when you say you're doing great, do you really mean it?
Yes.
Like, okay. Because a lot of people just be like, yeah, I'm good. Oh, I'm okay. But like mental, everything straight.
Yeah. I mean, I always say that I'm doing great. Recently, I've started to say it more, but that's just because that's been how I've been feeling more so than anything. It's great. Okay.
Great. Shoot, that's perfect, bro. What about you, Trey? How you been feeling lately?
Man, I've been feeling good. I ain't gonna cap. The more and more we work on this podcast, the more and more we do stuff like that I enjoy doing, the happier I feel. So, to start the day off, I just want the people to know, what is United Market?
United Market is a music production platform that is meant to aid music production professionals in collaboration and basically getting more projects done as a whole. So what we do is we pair music producers of similar talent or just whoever they decide together, and they just go ahead and get music done right now.
I'm not even gonna lie to you. I met like two producers yesterday. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know what the app did. Like, I was trying to read into it, but you know, I used to rap. So I was like, I have no clue what this would do for a rapper. Mm-hmm. But I was like, hey, my friend, Ku William, he has this United Market app. It's for producers. Just go ahead, download it, make an account, and y'all figure out what to do with it. Cause I was just so impressed with the branding, how clean everything looked like from your website to your app's logo to mm-hmm. when you go on the app, it still stays in that one realm of looking professional. So I was just really impressed with the product that you guys created.
Appreciate that.
And what sparked your interest in creating that product?
So the original idea that we had was a very broad idea. It went into a lot of different categories, and it was hard for us to get anywhere like that because there wasn't a consistent issue that all those entrepreneurs dealt with that would have been easy enough for us to figure out, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so our signup struggled, but there was one category of people where they flourished, and it was with music producers and audio engineers also. And when we really kind of dug in deeper, you know, we were connecting with a lot of different producers, like just literally pulling up on them and just talking about the idea and everything, and really asking them what made them sign up and everything. And it was really just because it was like, hey, this is somewhere where I can literally handle the entire business aspect of what I'm doing. Yeah. And so that was really the main point of emphasis and value that we had offered at that time. And now it's, you know, grown into something that we didn't even see from the beginning.
Mm. Yeah.
So when you say we, you have a whole team that's like behind it also.
Yeah. So it's me and my co-founder. We have our team of advisors, which is some pretty, you know, larger producers who kind of help us build out the screens, mm-hmm. the features, test the ideas. And I mean, to see if the ideas are even valid of being like put in the app in the first place. And yeah, so that's pretty much who it is.
Okay, that's what's up, man. That's what's up. I was thinking about it. I'm not even gonna lie. When he told me that there's somebody that has an app, I was like, oh my god, money, investments. Is there a way that somebody could invest in this app?
Yeah. So we would have to talk about that, you know, like off screen in private conversation. Mm-hmm. But sure, yes, there is definitely room for investment.
Okay, because okay. I definitely was sitting there like, man, this sounds like a great opportunity. I can't even lie, man. Especially because there's so many rappers out now.
Yeah,
there's
it
so
is.
So many people that's getting into the art, the music platforms and things of that nature. So it's
and
like
that's one of the main things that we're trying to figure out now is how do we get an artist to start working, you know, with that main producer that they can like always go to? Because if you look around the music industry right now, you see a lot of the same artists working with the same producer that they started with because they got that sound down, and that's what people really want to hear.
Mm-hmm. So my question is, what producers do you have on the app right now? Like, I saw you had that one guy, I forgot his name. Mm-hmm. I meant to write it down, but I forgot to. But he produces for Lil Baby.
Madison Music. Yeah, my boy Matt. Yeah, so he's on the app. He's actually helping us do a lot of our branding and promoting in regards to the engineers, so the people who mix and master, and they kind of just offer one main subset of services. Producers, it can be kind of more broad because producers do a lot of different things. But so we have right now on the app, we have Traumatone, Hoodrich Keem, we have, let's see who else. Mike Will made it. I'm just trying to think of like, these are
Mike Will on it.
Yeah.
These are people who are just like our main, like kind of initial people who are just going to like test it and help us like bring traffic to the app. Mm-hmm. And so I'd have to look at our list to really see who else that we had on there, but it is some other like CNCXD guy produces for Rod Wave. Algino, like, yeah. So some of them.
So with all these big names, like, have you ever came across any of the rappers that they produce for and talked to those guys as well?
Not really. You know, a lot of times the rappers, they aren't there when we meet these producers in person. They really aren't. I mean, not that I've seen. I'm sure that eventually it's going to happen one day. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, if it does, then that would be pretty cool. Yeah. You get to see. You know, but they'll probably tell us something like that before, like,
yeah, hey, yo, we're gonna have
such and such in the building, like,
just chill, whatever. Act cool.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried rapping yourself?
Hell no. Nah.
You don't think you got any?
Nah, I mean, I ain't got nothing to rap about. Like, what? Like,
what you mean?
Like, I mean, I went to a private school, like. I don't have anything to rap about. Not like I don't
Juice
like.
World.
See, but okay, but I get what you're saying. Like, not everything got to be like some hard shit. Yeah. But just I don't have anything to really like not to rap about.
But
I
mean,
I would rather like help people in a different way besides rapping.
Rap is a whole art form, though, bro.
Have you tried rapping?
Listen, man, I try and rap. But like the words just don't come out how I want them to. So it's like I try, but then I start fumbling words and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's why I was like, yeah, this isn't for me. Like I know that personally, but I've tried it. I've definitely dipped and dabbled. But yeah. Traeger is a whole.
I was. I don't.
Rapper. Oh yeah, I remember that. I
just fell into trap. Like I really didn't care about it anymore. Like it was like I didn't feel like people were interested in what I had to say because it wasn't. Money, drugs, and fucking bitches. I was actually trying to be smart, and niggas wasn't fuck with that at the time. So I just said, it is what it is, man.
Do you think that like there's a shift in that's going on right now? Like people are starting to listen to more deep music, or it's still that?
I feel like music has opened up, like especially with the alternative rap scene. It's like so many people who go into different introspects of what rap can be that everybody's open to listening to really anything. Like it's exemplified in songs like Old Town Road, where that's a country song, but black people were listening to it because it was a black person on it and it sounded like rap. So now I feel like people are more open to listening to whatever an artist can truly make.
Mm. Yeah, I'd agree with that. But I think in music, I think it's interesting because there are a lot of different alternative kind of like genres and, you know, people that I've seen that, I mean, I don't even know what their genre is. And it's like, you look at their YouTube streams and it's like 176 million views. And that shit's being played all over the world. And I mean, I feel like rap, for the most part, is a very popular thing in the African-American community, like strongly. And I think that in other cultures, unless you're like Lil Baby or like NBA YoungBoy, I mean, it's gonna be hard for you to break into those other kind of groups of people just because of what they are drawn to. It's like you have to be the best rapper to then get into all these other crowds of
like
people.
A Drake.
Yeah, because like it's some people who listen to Lil Baby and I've heard it before. It's usually like white people. They'd be like, yo. Like, I don't even know what this man is saying right
now. Dude, I'm trying to tell you. I'm trying to tell you.
This song is great, dude. Yeah. Oh, my God. Do you think, so you handle a lot of the business aspects on the United Market app, right? Mm-hmm. So if I'm a rapper and I go on your app, am I going on your app just to like see what beats producers have, like an app like a website like BeatStar?
Well, so right now, that is going to be a functionality that's going to come later, like buying and purchasing things from producers, because we're trying to see how we can make it different than what BeatStars is doing, because we don't want to just, you know what I'm saying, go at it from the same standpoint and then try to like just compete, which I don't, you know, that wouldn't really be the best strategy. But right now, what you would primarily use it for as an artist is just to go on there and find people who can mix and master your song or actually produce with you to make it better.
That's dope.
Yeah.
So it just gets you connected to those people. So you're telling me, like, if I was a rapper and I was to use your app, I could possibly get in touch with Mike Will.
Yeah, theoretically. You know, because we have it set to where, okay, we know that these big producers, if they're going to be on the platform, they're going to have a lot of people trying to get in contact with them. So we are going to limit their profiles in certain ways that people can't just like blow up.
Not everybody can just go and talk to Mike Will.
Yeah,
get you. I get you.
Because it'll build that exclusivity too. It'll be like a damn, like, well, here I am. Now it's like, what do I do?
First 10 downloaders can talk to Mike Will, maybe.
So like I said, we met two people, one dude named Nye K and one dude named E Milk. Malik, something like that. It was spelled weird, but both of my sent them on the app. I didn't know what they could use it for. I just said they liked the way it looked. I showed them your Instagram profile, the website, and they're like, oh, this shit look dope. Oh, they were like, Madison Music, oh crap, I know him. And they downloaded the app instantly.
Yeah,
so like, for somebody like them, let's say I were to start rapping for real again, if I'm a rapper, I'll go on that app and I'll like connect with 9K and be like, yo, 9K, I'm a rapper. I think we can make some dope stuff together.
Yeah.
And then move forward in that aspect.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, also too, from a producer perspective, a lot of the work that one of the kind of growing trends with music production is collaboration. So like, you know, and like yesterday we were in a session and a producer told us that we should offer like preset collabs. So it's like you buy like a certain piece of music from like one producer and then you just go ahead and mix it like by yourself, so you don't have to be there like in person to do the collab, if you know what I'm saying.
So,
but from a producer perspective, this gives you an opportunity to build kind of a network of producers that are like, okay, I like the way this nigga sounds, like we could work together, like if he lives close then we can meet in person or just do like whatever we need to do to further ourselves along.
I'm not gonna cap, this is completely off topic, but I was thinking about making the cover art to this episode, and Will is so much taller than me now. Like, when we were growing up, I was the tallest kid in the friend group, like literally.
Yeah,
you were tall?
I was the tallest kid out of everybody. Wow. Me, Graham, Sam, everybody, I was the tallest. Now Sam's 6'1", he's 6'3". I don't know how tall, I haven't seen Graham since.
Graham is 6'3", bro.
Yeah, so everybody taller than me now, and I'm just here. I've been 5'11" since it was what, 12?
I always tell people that it's a blessing being 6 foot. I can't even sit here and lie, man. If you hit 6 foot and up, you're good. You should be set in life. Like, there's no excuse.
I don't know why that came across my head. I was like, damn. But since I didn't introduce how I met William, I guess I'll tell the people. So when we were growing up, like, what was it? 10? We were like 10.
So, bro, it was low. It was like 8, 9, 10. It was literally like
we were little kids, and like they would just ride the bikes around the neighborhood. And I was like, oh shit! Like, I didn't know kids lived here because I had lived there my whole life, and they were just moving in, right?
No, we had been there for a minute. So we had been there since on the south side, like 2000, I think.
Yeah.
So like the year 2000, and then we moved in 2013, but during that time period, it was like me, it was Trey, it was, you know, my friend Graham, my old friend David, who I hadn't spoke to in a while. You remember? Yeah.
I forgot all about David.
Yeah. It was the Lampleys. It was Sam. It was a lot of people.
Little Beasley, like, kids.
Yeah.
Beasley kids. Logan and Trey. It was, I mean, like, you ever seen a TV show where all the kids in the neighborhood, it was just like that. We run around, play football, basketball, ride bikes.
That's the best time to live. I swear it is. I really hate that, like, I grew up.
I used to make me sad, like, because I stayed, like, me and Sam are the only two people who still live in that neighborhood. Graham moved out, like, after all, like, he
moved out after I moved out, I think. Yeah.
But that's because he went to boarding school, and his parents were like, well, what the hell? He's not going to be here for the next 8 years. We don't need his big ass house no more.
Yeah.
So then they moved out of their neighborhood and got, like, a condo. And the Lampleys, they went to Connecticut.
Yeah.
So, yeah, everybody just went their separate ways.
But, yeah. Layton's at UConn, and William is at Illinois College, I think is what it's called, Illinois College.
So we just, but it was that time period, bro. It was like, I felt like, man, I was like, awesome.
It was fun. There was not a care in the world.
I'm trying to tell just you. Play the only care is like, oh, I'm about to break this nigga's ankle.
And we would be playing video games too. Like, we'd be playing, this is back when Madden was good, like the old 2Ks.
God. Bro,
take me back, bro. And when my parents told me, do not rush to get old, I did not listen to them.
Yeah, like, I wanted to be an adult so bad. I wanted to drive a car and have a beautiful wife. I thought that's what everybody wanted. And they you gotta work for all that shit. They ain't tell me that part.
They ain't tell me that you really gotta sit here and put in work behind something, bro. But it's kind of sad that I don't see kids out anymore like they used to.
Yeah, you know, technology has got this thing to where kids are just so, I mean, I feel like that's a difference in our generation versus the kids now, because they just got like a whole bunch of video games, and it's like handheld video games, the ones that are like right here that you can sit there and focus on all day.
Yes, bro.
And so it's not like you're just looking at a screen, it's like you're looking at something in your hands, and this is like what you're using.
And I'm like, the kids this generation, like, do you have any younger sisters or siblings or anything like that?
Well, so I have three older sisters, my sister Franchelle, Sydney, Cameron, and then me.
Oh, so you're the baby?
Yeah.
Okay. But I have younger siblings. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sitting here watching them, I kid you not, watch YouTube about kids playing with toys. So these kids is watching other kids on YouTube play with toys.
Yeah.
And they're just completely fine with that.
But that's, I mean, we did that in the aspect. Like, we used to watch other kids play video games.
Hey, I used to watch Chris Move.
Oh, yeah, I never watched that.
You never watched Chris Move? Like, he would play the 2K marker, and I'd go in there and try to match him, like, do what he's doing.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I feel like, I don't know. I don't like, because you're talking about that little kid.
I'm talking about, like action figures, bro.
Yeah, like, because that kid makes Barbie $10 million. Dolls.
Oh, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I feel like I heard about this.
Yeah, he made like $10 million off YouTube. Bank too, bro.
But you gotta think about it. Because the toy company, the kids watch that kid play with that toy, and they say, oh shit, I want that toy too. So they go get it. And then now the company's making money, YouTube's making money, and that kid is getting his pockets lined too, which is dope. But I don't know. I just look at it.
It's just taken away from childhood, I see.
I don't feel like kids go out as much. Like, I feel like we went out more than the average kids our age anyways. Like, we were outside, like, during the summer, like, outside every day.
Every day.
It would be like, just, you know, we would be outside for, like, 7 or 8 hours.
Hours. No water. I don't know how we did it. Water hose. I had a water hose.
We would wake up, like, literally, like, 9, 10 o'clock in the morning, text everybody, and say, all right, let's go meet at the top of the hill.
Uh-huh.
And then with our bike, mountain bikes, just race down the hill, like all types of stuff.
Dang, I think we were like the last generation to do something.
Yeah,
like
we had dirt bikes. Like, me and my two friends, like the Lampleys, we had dirt bikes. Like, it was like these electric shits. Mm-hmm. It was my Razor. But them shits would be going fast, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And me and Sam didn't have those because our parents didn't let us get them.
It's just like dangerous as fuck, right?
Nah, we definitely got into some accidents. Literally.
Nah, I think I ain't gonna lie, like, when I get older, I'm gonna force my kids to go outside. Is that wrong?
I don't think it's wrong. I mean, I think it depends on the situation, like, if they're an athletic kid, or if, like, you know, sports is something they're interested in.
I ain't gonna count, like, regardless.
They're going outside.
Be a little dweeb.
I don't care.
You need fresh air, bro.
You need that social time also, bro.
And it's crazy because the way we used to get punished was, you can't go outside today.
Yeah.
Now it's like, I see my little cousin, like, my little cousin Kayla, she loves being in the house. She loves being playing the video games on her iPad shit. My mom would literally make, they have a pool in their backyard. My mom would literally make her go to the pool. I mean, not my mom, my aunt would literally make her go to the pool to swim as punishment. Like, if you would have punished us with swimming,
we're swimming, bro.
Okay.
You swimming for hours on end, bro. You're tripping.
Like, that's...
Yeah, we had a neighborhood pool, too. And it was, like, this big-ass pool. Man, that Regency neighborhood is a good neighborhood. It really is. But the way they built it was for older families, because that's who they thought was going to move in. So they didn't put a basketball court. They had tennis courts, and then they had this long pool. But during the summertime, I mean, that was like, that was lit.
Yeah,
I mean, seriously, it was a really, really nice common area. And then, because I don't think anybody in the neighborhood, I think it was maybe one family that had a pool in that neighborhood.
At the time it was one. Now it's probably like two or three.
So are y'all enjoying adulting more than your childhood?
I'll say that my childhood, I got out of it everything that I kind of wanted to. I mean, literally as a kid, I did pretty much all that I wanted to do. So I think now, and especially with kind of how I've developed over the past couple of years, I think that I'm having probably, I wouldn't say more fun, not necessarily, because there's not going to be, I don't know of another time where I'm going to be able to just be like, screw it. I'm going to just do what I want today, you know? But yeah, I do think that I got pretty much everything that I wanted to out of it.
What about you, man?
I mean, I think everybody has those times where they wish, like, oh, I wish I could go back and do this. But like he said, I feel like our childhoods and mine specifically developed me into the way that I am now, and I'm grateful for it. But now it's time to move forward with those gifts that I've gotten. What about you, Miller?
See, with me, I'm telling you, I really enjoyed my childhood. Like, but I guess you're right, because I couldn't wait to drive, and I'm sure, like, if somebody took my license from me, I'll feel like a little kid again, and I would hate that. I can't. At one point, you do have to grow up, so you're right. Right. I probably wouldn't take that back, but if there was an opportunity to go back, like, for, like, I'll say, like, a couple of hours or so, I'd probably do it.
Yeah, I'll probably do it, too.
And, like, moving on from childhood and developing into you, to who you are today, some things that you're into is, like, your spirituality, a thing called shamanism in specific. Would you like to discuss more about what shamanism is?
So, shamanism is a... It has a long history to it. And if you kind of research it and get into kind of like the origins of it, at least for me, I've gotten different kind of stories, like, on like where it came from. And I just know that it was really, really far back. I'm blanking on what the nationality that started it or like figured out what it was. But essentially, in the most simple way that I can say it, all that you're doing is shifting your consciousness to a certain area of yourself and removing blocked energy. And so that's what I learned how to do in October 2020 with this lady who, I don't know if she wanted me to say her name. She told me not to say her name video, so I'm not going to say her name. But she taught me, she stays in Kennesaw, she taught me all of, almost pretty much. So going into the course, though, before I started practicing shamanism, I was into spirituality, just like meditating, and I was doing like breath work, and I was just trying different types of healings because I started to actually look into what this stuff meant. So, you know, I'm sure you guys have seen kind of like the solfeggio frequencies, like the 396 hertz, like the 528 hertz, 432 hertz.
You're talking about those sounds that could change like your emotions or something?
Yeah. And so I started to look into that. That was one of the first things because, you know, when I looked into it, it was telling me, oh, this for, I think 396 is for like guilt, fear. And it kind of helps balance your root chakra. And so online, when I saw that it was talking about the root chakra, I was like, what is that? And then so I just typed in, what is a root chakra? And then so I started to get all this different information about kind of what makes up a person from an energetic standpoint. And then on top of that, I started to implement it into my life and I started to feel it. You know what I mean? And so this is doing shamanism though. Before that, and like after shamanism, what shamanism did basically was like it compiled any possible healing that I wanted to do on myself into just one thing. Mm-hmm. And the way that it did it was just through what they call journeys. So basically what you do in a journey is you have an eye mask, and you can, like, with the eye mask on, I didn't mean to hit the mic, but when you have an eye mask on, you can either have your eyes open or closed. And what you're doing is you journey. So like the way that you do a journey is, the way that you do a journey is basically like you imagine a couple of doors, and then you like go through the different doors, and then you have to go into your heart chamber, which is where you're in your actual heart chamber. So like it's attached to your heart, literally. That is where you are in contact with your higher self, like your highest stream of consciousness that you have. So
can you go a little bit deeper into higher self?
So higher self is it's kind of who you would be if you were dead. And that's the best way that I can kind of explain it. And that may sound kind of crazy, but your higher self is literally the self that is wanting everything best for you versus your ego, which does not necessarily have your best interest all the time.
See, when I hear higher self, like I listen to stuff and they say higher self, I think of like maybe my future self. So when you said like yourself when you're dead, I guess that is kind of like the future.
Well, so the future self is, so like how I kind of look at it is, there, like, this might sound kind of crazy too, but for me personally, I don't really ever like use the word like past or future. I just, because if you think about it, the only time that you can really live in is right now. Yeah. And so, you know, like your higher self is your highest self. That's going to be consistent throughout your entire life. Your higher self is always going to be there. Mm-hmm. And throughout the day, all of us have times where we're in contact with our higher self. It's just up to us to become more conscious of what our higher self is and what is telling us versus our ego. And when you can get to that point, you could do that through meditation, and you could do it through breath work, getting to a point where you're in contact with your higher self, but you're able to discern the thoughts that are of your highest self versus the ones that aren't.
My fault. But just before we go any deeper into this topic, my favorite part about this topic, like, it has nothing to do with anything that's been said, right? So the whole time we've talked about this, you've had a smile on your face. So my question to you is, was this something that brought you out of a darker area in your life?
Yeah. So, I mean, literally my freshman and sophomore year of college were terrible. I didn't fuck with it at all. I mean, I had a lot of misunderstandings too about life and kind of just who I was. And, you know, I struggled with self-confidence, like social anxiety, not really wanting to involve myself in anything like on campus or, you know, make friends or anything like that. And literally it wasn't because, so at my heart, I knew that I wasn't some socially awkward nigga who like couldn't make friends or anything like that, because I had plenty of friends who I talked to all the time. And it would be weird because people who didn't know me, they would say that I'm the quietest person, but people who do know me think that I talk the most out of anybody that they know. And so what that said to me was just like comfort zone. Like I needed to work on that aspect. But kind of going into the course leading up into those months, from January to like October when I actually took it, I was doing a lot of what they call like hypnosis sessions, which is kind of like a deeper meditation, is kind of how I describe it. But it's not like somebody, you know, taking over what you like can do, you know what I'm saying? You could get up, like you're not controlled in the hypnosis session. You're not. But what you're doing is, it's kind of misunderstood for people to think about it like that, because if you have somebody who is a hypnosis person, they could theoretically do that to you. But when it's on a phone and it's just a recording, nothing's going to happen. So you basically are meditating, but at the same time, you're visualizing who it is that you want to kind of go out and be. And I instantly noticed after this one video that I did, it was a hypnosis session, that it seemed like all my like confidence issues, all my self kind of like insecurities were gone. And I was a lot more interactive in public. I was just a lot more social. And I mean, I feel like if y'all try to see, you probably would, like, feel some kind of like, you know what I'm saying? It depends on your level of social skills now. Cause if you are good socially already, you may not notice that big of a difference. Cause either these are things that you just naturally do. But, for me, it made a big difference. And that kind of showed me that there is another kind of side to this world that we live in that I don't think many people know of. And I like, so this was kind of me transforming into kind of just like, you know, I would like to say I'm at a better version of myself. I don't think I'm at the best version of myself, but after doing all those hypnosis sessions and then playing those like solfeggio frequencies at night, my dreams started to get crazy. Then it started to get crazy. They started to get good. I mean, my dreams now are like, I go to sleep and then wake up somewhere else completely different. And it's, they're really like lucid. I mean, it's kind of crazy, but.
You think dreams really hold power though?
Yeah. So part of shamanism, what you can do is you can do a dream divination and you can figure out what your dream actually was trying to tell you.
And, so you think that dreams tell you things,
really? Yeah, I think all dreams primarily either have a, sometimes they have a message. Other times, like, dreams can represent healing. So like dreams where you're in them and they feel really, really good, that may not always have a hidden message behind it, but it's more so just meant to show you that like while you were sleeping, you were like actually being healed. And but so yeah, going into, you know, doing the shamanism course, there was this day where, so like the first couple sessions, the first one that we did was we, you know, just traveled to our heart chamber and we basically, you got to ask the question of like, who are you? And, you know, like, what are you here to do on this planet basically? And so after the journey, you write down what it was, the information that you heard, because when you write it, you're going to get more information to kind of like channel through you. And so the second session that we did was to, this one was to get a power animal. So I don't know if you guys have heard of like power animals or anything like that in the media or whatever, but.
Is it like, you know, when you watch like, just to put it in like kids terms, like if you ever watch like a Kung Fu Panda type movie and, well, not a Kung Fu Panda type movie, but like any movie where the kid, like it'll be like a person and right behind it will be like a big ass animal.
Like a spirit animal?
Yeah,
like
spirit animal is the better word for
get
it.
Get that shit out at
yeah.
all.
Yeah. So like your spirit animal, this was a more intense journey because you have to travel to what they call the lower world, which is where animal souls kind of exist. And so when you, and it's, this is like a very like deep spiritual thing too. So a lot of people who practice shamanism, they won't even really teach it to you per se, unless you, I mean, they will, but.
Animal. Yeah, you was talking about like the lower realm.
Yeah, so with your spirit animal slash power animal, this is basically, well, this journey, it's kind of, it's just, this one is different. This journey is stronger. I would say it's stronger from my personal experience. Other people though, when they journey, sometimes they have like, they feel a certain type of way and different ones that I don't feel a thing. You know what I mean? So it is kind of subjective, but I've heard a lot of people who have tried that journey and they'll be like, yeah, it's kind of like, but the thing about all of this that really confirmed kind of like a really strong belief in it was when we did this power animal journey and we had to go to the lower realm. Number one, it felt like I was literally about to fall like out of my body essentially, but it felt like I was still attached to my body. It was just more so I wasn't really like, I felt very, very like still, more still than what you would say like comfortably still, you know what I mean? So yeah. The whole time I'm like in my head, I'm like, okay, I like,
you know, I want to do this journey, but shit, like, I gotta stay, I still gotta stay attached to my body.
You don't want
to
lose yourself.
Yeah, so, like, during the journey, there would be times where, like, I, like, low-key move my hand or, like, low-key, like, move my leg or something to, like, still reaffirm that I'm, like,
I'm still here.
Yeah, like, you know what I mean? And so, once, like, I feel like my leg move or, like, my hand move, it's like, okay, I'm still in control. But during this journey, when we get into the lower realm, and the stuff that you see is like, it, the lower realm is very, very vivid. So I literally looked, it literally looked like I was traveling through a forest. And so my kind of counselor through all this, who's guiding me through the through the journey on the outside, who's like watching me do it. Or I think she may have journeyed with me. I think she did do the journey with me. Cause like in shamanism, you guys can do the same journey if I let this other person into it. And so what they would do is then like visualize me and then like visualize like, but the journey is going to be the exact same.
Yeah.
Because you're now in this person's consciousness, if that makes sense. Because once you go into somebody else's heart chamber, that's where you enter into their kind of world, basically.
Okay.
And it's, you know, you got to trust somebody to do that though. But so back to the power animal thing. When you call out to your power animal, when I did it, literally, I came face to face with an actual tiger. Like, if I was to close my eyes, because I had on an eye mask, but I had my eyes closed under it, and I came face to face with a tiger. Like, literally, it showed itself. And I'm not talking about, like, I visualized it. No, this came, like, clear view vision, like plain sight.
It wasn't a maroon tiger, it was a real tiger.
Nah, yeah, and it was big, and it just showed itself, and I'm like, this is so wild. I felt like it would be something that you probably would see if you were off shrooms. It's probably the only other way that I can explain that. But when I saw that, when I was off no drugs or anything, I was like, this is wild. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, the way that I felt also, so after the power animal session, I'm not sure at what point that I got my healing done, which was by the lady and her other partner, who they kind of do healings together sometimes, on certain clients. And so on this day, this also kind of showed me like, you know, this energy thing is really real, because after they did the healing, during the process of them doing the healing, I was like still at a point where I didn't have a lot of self-confidence. I didn't have like a lot of like, I had a lot of insecurities, just different things like that, which I was still trying to just work through spiritually. And on the day that I got my healing, I have never, ever, 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 ever felt so good internally. And it was a really intense energy. It felt like I had a weight lifted completely off my shoulders that, you know, I didn't even know was attached to me in a sense. And yeah, so after I got that healing done, then, you know, she showed me how to cleanse and balance my chakras, my like heal my aura. Now I'm doing, you know, some different like deeper journeys, which are essentially the same kind of thing in terms of how to actually like do it. But overall, I think that it's something that has changed my life, literally. I mean,
Yeah, because I was reading Will Smith's book, and he talked about how he got in touch with the shaman at one point. Yeah, and he was telling me, like, it was the most life-changing experience that he's ever had. He also told me about, well, told me, he also talked about how he tried ayahuasca, you know what ayahuasca is, and how that that even like was even like the most intense experience that he's ever felt. Also, is that something that you would try?
Ayahuasca. I'm not the only one. No,
I'm kind of scared to try it, but I think I would. Why wouldn't you?
I've seen videos of people do it, and you know, when people start kind of like twitching and like all that stuff, I don't know. I think, because the information that I can get access to now, it's like, sure, it could be, you know, taken to a different level with ayahuasca, but
feel like you don't need it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I really don't. I just don't. Now, you know, something that's a little bit less intense, probably. Because there was this one dude on YouTube who was talking about ayahuasca, and he was saying that it felt like he was, like, literally walking on the edge of, like, his consciousness.
I'm like, man. And that's what's crazy. Like, the spiritual realm is, like, something that's real. Like, I could honestly say. And that's why, like, although I have a love-hate relationship with religion, the religions that deal with spirituality, I love. Like, I have a real love for it, because at least we all have the same basis as we all have a spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's one thing that connects almost all religion and death. So that's one thing that's pretty cool to me, at least. So would you ever become a shaman?
I am. I mean, I'm about to come out with my own course called Divine Mind, and it's going to be kind of focused toward a younger group of people who, you know, has a lot of issues with anxiety, depression, and just like school related, work related type things that they have to kind of just get through and deal with. But I mean, you know, shamanism as a whole, it's something that they would never ever teach in like a high school or school. I mean, and that's where I feel like schools, and that's kind of a failure, I feel like, of education just in general. They never tell you any holistic ways that might work as to how you can kind of heal yourself or feel better. Because a lot of anxiety is really just breathing properly. I mean, if you can't breathe correctly, then, you know, like, there's a connection between your breath and your kind of, like, train of thought and, like, how fast your thoughts are flowing in and out. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you can't breathe correctly, you're going to be like always mind racing whole time. All you just need to do is just take some deep breaths and you'll be fine. You certainly not go, you know, take some Adderall or, you know, whatever it is. Like, mm-hmm. And then the medications are, in my mind, they're kind of short lived from a logic perspective, because I mean, somebody who struggles with anxiety, is like, you give them an anxiety pill that doesn't really work. I mean, like, in my experience, I'll say that it didn't really help me. And on top of that, I knew it wasn't sustainable. Like, as a human being, I just don't see that as something that would be beneficial to my health, taking a certain pill for, like, into my 40s because of anxiety. Like,
I don't think it's a way to heal. I think it's more like a Band-Aid.
Yeah, definitely is. Definitely is a Band-Aid.
So, on your story, right? I followed you since we were kids. So, on your story, you talk a lot about, first of all, real estate. So, I wanted to ask, like, what real estate ventures have you gotten into?
So, right now, I haven't invested in real estate at all, but right now, I'm trying to become a commercial broker.
Okay.
So, yeah. And I had an internship last year with Cushman & Wakefield with their leasing team.
Okay. Yeah. That's dope.
So, that's really about it with, like, as far as, like, you know, real estate and kind of, like, where I'm at with that.
And another thing you talk about is the law of attraction and manifesting thing.
Yes.
And its correlation to success. So, how have you yourself used this law and...
So, the way that I used this law was, I would say that it was, I would say that everything that I asked for in terms of before I started kind of my spiritual journey and like where I'm at now, everything that I kind of asked for has become true, but there was always an action that followed kind of what I was after. So I feel like people now, is when they hear manifesting and, you know, all these different things and the law of attraction, they don't, the way that it's kind of portrayed, and I can see how people can take it to mean like literally you just wake up and say your affirmations and just go do whatever, but it really is kind of two sides to it. You have to first, like, visualize what you want, like, and then like speak it, you know what I'm saying, and really like, but the second part to that is really living it, you know what I mean? And really kind of attracting the outcome to you that you want. And so, what was the question you asked me? My bad. I got kind of carried away.
Oh,
how has it been beneficial in my life?
Yeah.
But, So with UM number one, the fact that we were able to get all the money that we did to even build this, I mean, I had ideas of wanting to be a business owner from when I was 17, and I was like, this is going to take a minute, but this is something that I want to do like today. You know what I mean? And so UM is probably the biggest manifestation. I would say that how I feel on a like inner perspective in terms of just self-confidence, self-awareness. I feel like that is also a manifestation too, because I just remember kind of how I used to be versus how I am now. And it was all in just like my own mind, literally. The universe is all mental, you know what I mean?
And I can speak to that, because like when we were kids, like not saying you were the mean kid, but all of us, like we were all angry and we talk shit to each other a lot. Like a lot, like way more than kids probably should. But even to now, like you just sound way more calm than like Coop used to be yelling. Like that was just, that's probably why I still talk loud to this day. Like that's just how we were. We yelled at each other and that's how we got along. But now it's just like a chill, calm, like let things come as it go flow.
So my question to you is, well, like, what is your beliefs in like God?
So my beliefs in God is kind of like, I think that God is kind of,
Do you even believe in God first?
Yeah, I do. Okay. But I think God is like something that's so vast that even from this kind of like an issue that I had with just religion as a whole, it was kind of like you guys are trying to like say that this being or entity is one specific thing. And I'm like, if you look around, God is in everything. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, for example, God is in the trees, God is in animals, like God is in us. I mean, and so when you think about it from that perspective and then kind of the impermanence of things, so like, for example, us getting older or probably like time and just in general, kind of like impermanence, for example, like overtime periods, like dudes switching basketball teams, like literally any example of impermanence and anything that has a life inside of it, I think you could classify that as being something that is part of God. So I don't really look at God necessarily as if he's something that's so separate from us. I feel like we come from the source, you know what I mean? So I think that from a Christian perspective, you kind of look at God as like, you know, some Christians might disagree with this, but I think that the main kind of like depiction of it is a guy who is on the outside looking in, you know what I mean? And like looking at down on us like, hey, you guys, you know. And then it's a couple other reasons like why I have like certain issues with Christianity that I can't really like get over per se, but I really think that God is in all of us and he's way more vast than anything that we could really imagine with our own consciousness.
And see, that was my struggle with Christianity too. I mean, although I am still a Christian, but I still struggle with that. I feel like they put a limit on like his power. When you say that he's all powerful, you have to look aside from like what we can think of all powerful as, you know, like when you say all powerful, you really have to genuinely sit there and say like, he could do some shit that I can't even imagine. So like, for example, like what's your thought on like the devil or things of that nature?
Well, so from research that I've done, and you know, I've researched this topic kind of, I haven't spent like a whole lot of time researching this, but this is kind of like the beginning stages of, you know, where I've started to kind of just read books like Black Root Science. I've gotten through probably about 100 pages, The Kybalion. I've read The Kybalion, like,
what is that?
It's the Hermetic Principle teachings, where it kind of just talks about as above, so below, the law of correspondence, the law of rhythm, the law of vibration, the law of...
Okay, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah,
so it goes into what it's really talking about. And it's really deep. But so in terms of like the devil and hell, I mean, from a spiritual perspective, believing in that, it goes against the very nature of somebody who would classify themselves as being like completely spiritual, because you like in your mind, you believe that you've been on Earth before and that you are a life form that has an indestructible soul. So what that means is that energy can't be created or destroyed, which is a law, like a kind of just a like scientific principle. Like a scientific principle, if that really even makes sense. But it's the same thing kind of just with your soul, basically.
So you don't think that there is a devil? What about like evil spirits or anything like that?
Definitely believe in evil spirits. So that's something that you can find out with shamanism too. So shamanism, it'll give you access to, it depends on the journey that you're doing. Most self-healing things, you're not going to run into any, like, evil spirit, you know what I mean? But now, if you go out with the intention of actually trying to conjure up a spirit that isn't of a high vibration, you could do it. And you could, that is what a lot of, I feel like they get the ideas from, of, like, kind of, like, entity removals, which is exorcisms, right, or... You know, like people playing with the Ouija boards.
Like, can't do that shit.
Because you can. It is possible to open.
You just gotta go out there and try and find it.
There is a way that you can do it too. If you like open up like a portal, but you'd have to like, it's like a certain spell, I think, and you have to like literally like spin in a circle around you, and like the circle in which you did it is the portal. So. I don't. That's kind of the.
Don't even want to teach y'all how to do that. But I was just asking because Christians like to think that God didn't create evil. Like the devil is just this whole second person that is equally powerful or something like that. I genuinely think that when you say that God created everything, I think that includes like evil also. So. How do you feel about that?
I think that in our life right now, what we classify as kind of like good and evil, I feel like it's all about kind of the, like there are good things and there are bad things, but I feel like a lot of it and the viewpoint of it, it always has to be from kind of someone else. So, for example, like something that's horrible that happens is going to feel like it's way worse to the person that kind of like just experienced it happening to them. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like almost like a duality, really, like a polarity between the two, where it's like, you know, there are some good things and then there are some bad things, but it just depends on the person who's looking at it. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is like, you really don't know kind of at what point does something that's good turn into something that's bad, theoretically. Like, so it really just depends on kind of the viewer. But I do think that evil is necessary, though. Like, not necessary in the sense where people need to do bad things, but if there's going to be positive, then there has to be something negative, theoretically. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, yes, that would be... I would consider that God creating evil.
Right.
And like, I mean, but the way in which Christians are viewing it is they're viewing it as something that has a human consciousness that is like, I'm going to create bad and I'm going to create good. Mm-hmm. I don't think that whatever created us set back and was like, yeah, I'm going to create like evil here, you know, and then I'm going to create like good stuff over here. I don't think that's, because if you look at the universal laws, they all follow kind of a set way of kind of just doing things. And so I don't think God just sat down and was like, hey, let me create evil. But at the same time, it's like, if we live in a world where good is possible, then you also live in a world where evil is possible,
because you wouldn't be able to know that it's good if it wasn't
something evil. Bad on the other side.
Right. So you talk about Christianity. Have you at one point been Christian?
Yes, I grew up I was Methodist. I was pretty into it. But I just had a lot of just questions. And so, you know, when I got my computer, like my desktop, it was a Dell. It was old as hell now, but I mean, it worked back then. But so it was the first time where I really had access to something other than what the church was just telling me. You know what I mean? So I would go on YouTube and then I would just see people in the comments and they would be like joking about Christianity. And I was like, where is this coming from? Mm-hmm. And so, because in my mind, in the way that I was raised, it's just what it was. It was, you know what I mean? And so I just YouTube and kind of just asking questions online was the first time that I really looked at, you know, other belief systems that weren't in my head at that point. Mm.
And how did your parents handle that?
We didn't really talk about it.
For real?
No, I mean, you know, my parents are spiritual too. Like, they, I mean, you know, my sisters, we don't really... If one of us was atheist, we wouldn't really care.
Okay, no, that's cool.
We don't really do things like
that. So y'all are pretty open.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
that's what's up, man. That's what's up.
My question is, like, you also, like, just tying back to the Instagram stories, you talk a lot about battling human urges and things such as your journey with NoFap, removing yourself from alcohol and other mind-numbing things, dopamine detoxes, like not taking in as much content as you may want to. So would you like to speak a lot about any of those topics in specific?
Now, I will say, doing NoFap and semen retention, and that's kind of a secret that I didn't really share a whole lot, but it was one of the most powerful things that I didn't really... I felt that I would be doing a disservice to people not telling them that, hey, that is something that you can be in tune with and you can really use to, like, you know, build up what it is you're trying to do and, like, kind of heal your own body. So when I was doing, like, semen retention, NoFap, that was a lot of energy that I was, like, that I had.
You're letting go. Yeah. Because I tell you, when I bust a nut, I'm drained. I'm not going
to
lie.
Time to go to bed.
Exactly.
For real. And then you also spoke about how, like, it's not only just not masturbating. It's also, like, don't give your body to anybody. Like, he was speaking about how when you have sex with someone, you're not just having sex with that person and then moving on.
And stuff
you're connecting to that person.
Yeah.
And then you take all that bad energy and good energy that they have with you.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, like, the thing about doing that, and, like, people don't, you know, I feel like people don't really care that much, but after a while, like, doing, like, if you have sex with a whole bunch of people who are just low vibrational, then that's going to wear on you. And it'll wear on in ways that, you know, you're just going to feel kind of just a little, like burnt out after a while. Like, damn, like, I really have no energy. Like, your mind is probably going to be really at a level that probably theirs was, to be all the way honest. It's like, if you're a person of a high vibration, that's why when people talk about stealing your energy, that's one of the primary ways in which you can steal someone's energy is if you're low vibrational and you have sex with them. But doing NoFap, that also helped with a lot of kind of just enjoyment that I was getting out of things in my daily life. Literally, I mean, but like the porn industry in... You know, like, doing all that shit, to me, like, I don't do any of that shit anymore, you know what I'm saying? Like, when I was younger, I did, but now it's like, I just don't want to feel, like, so low. Because when you're at, like, a high vibration, if you do something that is very low vibrational, you're going to feel it. It's going to kill you. It's going to kill you off just a little bit, like, and it's going to be like, damn, I shouldn't have did that. Because... you just knocked yourself kind of off your pivot a little bit. You know what I mean? And not doing it once after not doing it in a minute, obviously is going to be different than if you just started back doing it again like it was just nothing. You know what I mean? But I'll say that was one thing that also too showed me the power of energy, literally, in that you can feel this stuff. So, like, one thing that I had an issue with in terms of Christianity was, like, I didn't necessarily feel anything. You know what I mean? But, like, I felt the, you know what I'm saying? Like, I felt the vibe and, like, the mood of it or whatever, like, the emotion of it. But I didn't feel like, okay, you know, when I woke up in the morning that I was just fresh, that I was just, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, just ready to, I didn't feel that way necessarily.
I feel like it's with Christianity, well, with religion as a whole,
that I feel like there's so many options for a reason. I feel like everybody should go out and explore which option makes them feel the way you feel.
Yeah.
Like, just because Christianity does that for me and may do it for others doesn't mean it'll do it for you and it'll do it for you.
Yeah.
Everything in life is all about your personal belief system.
Yeah.
It's not, that's why I hate when, like, I go to church and then the pastor will say, if you're this, you're going to go to hell. Or if you're that, religion isn't a say-all, be-all. The only thing that we know that's true is that there's good and that there's evil. The only thing that we know for a fact is that there is a God. And I don't feel like there's any wrong way for anyone to connect with God. But to tie it all back into what you're saying, like, that's one thing that I've loved about this whole conversation. It's never been a point where it's like you can't find something in any aspect of religion as a whole and connect it to what you've been speaking about, especially because we're talking about spirituality in general. And even with, like, with your feeling guilt thing, everybody feels guilty after they do something they know they shouldn't do. Like, and that should show people, like, you should go and search and find who you are on a spiritual level. It could be through Christianity, Islam, shamanism, Buddhism, whatever you find that gets you to the point where you're like, okay, I get it now. Find it, explore it, and take heed to it.
And see, that's why I definitely believe that God created good and evil, but he also created all these different religions too. All these different outlets for people to, you know, get in touch with him.
Yeah.
And that's what's beautiful. But do y'all think that, like, do y'all think, so this is my question of the day, right? Do y'all think that religion did more harm or more good?
Ooh.
That's a good question. That's all a really good question. I got an answer to, I have my answer.
All right, so my answer is, it did more good than harm. Religion itself did more good than harm. Now, the people within religion have done more harm than good. So I feel like people as a whole, we're prideful in what we believe in. Like, even to me, I joined a fraternity, and I tell my dad, my frat is better than yours every day. So it's like, it's just one of those things. When you have a strong belief in something, and you're a part of it, and you feel like you're a part, you want your thing to be better. So you'll do anything in your power as a human to negate the feelings of other people.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to say about that?
Well, I think that religion, in terms of doing more harm than good, I would have to lean more. I agree with what you're saying in terms of the people inside of it, and it's still like its core values is meant to be positive. And that's kind of this, I agree with that. I think that that's exactly the state of it right now. And I think that in terms of doing more harm or good, I would have to lean towards more harm, in all honesty, just because I look at the way that how extreme people can take these religious beliefs into being, to where it's like in certain countries, you have women who can't even read or write legally. You know what I mean? I think that that's where it gets to a point where I'm like, well, this should all be like someone's own individual choice. You know what I mean? Like, and we're blessed to have that opportunity here in America. But also, too, from a historical standpoint, this was probably my largest issue with Christianity as a whole. And it kind of makes me mad a little bit when I first initially read it. But there is I haven't read much of the book. I read probably like the first couple of pages, but there's a book called, and then I did some other background research on this topic. So there was a book called How to Make a Negro a Christian. And basically what they did was these West African slaves who weren't religious at all, didn't really practice a religion or anything like that. They were taken like on slave ships across the seas. And the first time that they hear about Christianity is when like their slave master is saying, hey, look at this book and look at what it says on this text about how if you obey your master, like you're going to like have a good life in the afterlife and shit. And so I think that that part was kind of, I think that to me in my mind, it sparked the question of, well, why? Like, I'm like, why are we so sold on this? Like, if it's something that in our history was, and I think there was even a slave ship called the Jesus or whatever. Yeah. I'm like, I get, you know, the Negro spirituals, all that, but the very like core of it and root of it is just all meant to kind of control like what they were believing in and trying to control like their own. And then the older slaves, actually, they didn't bring them to the mainland of America as consistently because younger people are more impressionable. Right. You know what I mean? You can't get these older people who've been doing these indigenous practices that they kind of believe in and hold to heart. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is stuff that's similar to shamanism in a lot of ways. Now, I can't go into like what tribes, what exactly they did, but it was very much so like spiritual stuff. And, you know, when we get here to America, it's like, damn, like this is the, how we kind of
got this is the outcome.
Yeah. This is the outcome. That's the only thing that was just fucked up to me about it.
Well, my answer to that question is, like, when I go to church, I don't go to church often, but when I do go to church, one thing I can say is it's a beautiful sight to see, especially Black people. This is where, like, church is where Black people could link up and actually just have a good time. No shootings happen, no fightings happen, and they get along for the most part. So it builds communities. That's what religion does. But again, what you were saying is, it puts those communities against each other, especially. Yeah. And I think that probably does more harm to anything else. Like, that really does.
And I mean, like, a lot of wars that have taken place. I mean, if you think about it, the whole reason why 9/11 took place, based on what the government tells us, which is a whole different topic, is, I'll be honest, I think the government literally has their hands in everything. I think they make everything happen on purpose. Yeah, and they sit back and they're like, oh my God, we didn't know this was going to happen. Yes, y'all did. Y'all knew exactly what was going to happen. Because there are always people beforehand who are going to be like, this is about to cause this to happen. Yeah. And they're like, no, it's not. And then it does. And it's like,
because COVID, like, COVID is the best example of all that. Like, people are saying, like, yo, Trump, like, we might need to do something about this shit. And then he said, that shit ain't gonna do nothing. And then he got here, he was like, man, that shit ain't gonna do nothing. And then, well, he got to shut shit down, and then everything shut down. So, yeah.
This is gonna sound kind of crazy, but like, the Simpsons really just be exploiting all of them. Yeah. Like, there's no way, like, they get it right, like, a lot of times. And for them to get it right that many times, it's kind of like, hey, when are we going to really start paying attention?
Yeah, this might not be a coincidence.
It might not be a coincidence. Do you not think that there's, like secret societies really out there that's pulling the strings?
I don't think it's one that's pulling the strings. What I think about The Simpsons is you what's that word? You can see trends, right? And what I think they've done is, like, because, well, like, with the prediction of the Trump presidency, Trump had been talking about running for president since 1990-something.
I think he had tried, and he had just dropped out a couple of times, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so, it wasn't like, The Simpsons don't predict anything that hasn't been said before. They just find stuff. And they're like the Trump president thing. Like, they found out that he tried to do it. They made an episode about it. And then, boom, he ran
in that episode, though, they have him going down the escalator, waving his hand the perfect time. And then there's also, they predicted 9/11. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you, man.
Yeah.
There is a picture where there was a 9/11, and then there was, like, a plane coming towards you or some shit. And I was just like, golly, bro. Like, these niggas is really, they predicted COVID, too.
Yeah,
It's kind of scary.
I think that, like, I don't know. I just, after a while with all the different things that happen, especially on the news, like CNN and all these different places, it's like every single story is all just meant to make you feel a certain kind of way. It's meant to make you feel scared.
Facts.
Like, but, I mean, ever since COVID happened, I haven't heard a single word about the Taliban. I haven't heard a single word about ISIS. I haven't heard a single word about Al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. I ain't heard about Al-Qaeda since, like, 2011 or 2012. And it's like, all it is, when I really looked at it, was like, this is the agenda that they're trying to push. Ever since 9/11, they know that's something that Americans are going to get scared over. So, yeah, tell them about, like, what's going on with the terrorist groups who are over there, you know, doing what they do. It's like, and that they're gonna come here and really try and do something, which is, I mean, you look at the security now, it's that kind of almost, it's hard. I mean,
but you gotta think about when, like, let's say we were to gauge war, you have to have your people behind you. And they found out with World War I and World War II the easiest way to get people behind you is by telling them about all the bad that this other country is doing. So instead of like, I mean, granted, I can't think of much good Germany did during World War II. Mm-hmm. But I can't think of much good they did, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't a single article about the puppies that Hitler fed. It's about the people that he has in concentration camps, and we need to get these guys out.
Yeah.
So that's what it is. It's like, war is the most profitable thing in the world. So if you're able to get your people behind war, then it's like, all right, bet. Now they're all in. We can convince people to put on green outfits and go shoot people. Let's do it. Mm-hmm. And then everybody at home is going to be like, oh, thank you, soldiers.
Yeah, it's war and pandemics. Yeah. They kind of create that influx of the economy to kind of just like...
And my fault, I didn't mean to cut. But like the one time we didn't do that was with the Vietnam or Korean War. And they were throwing piss at damn soldiers. Mm-hmm. So it's all about... They realize you have to get your people behind you to fight this fight before you just go out and do that shit. But
so you keep on saying they. So y'all think, like I said, we can agree that there may be like an elite society out there that's pulling the strings behind this.
Well, I'm speaking straight to the government, though.
My biggest thing, though, is kind of a deep spiritual point, is that you realize that we live in a world where not everybody... has a soul, literally. Ooh. Like, and so you kind of wonder, for people who don't have a soul, what they're capable of doing, that somebody who does have a soul, like, is in the process. This might sound kind of wild too, you know what I mean, like, but granted, I feel like I can say a lot of this stuff because I remember being somebody who's a Christian and like viewing anything that sounds crazy as like beyond the pale, mm-hmm. or like realm of possibility. But basically what happens is, this is something that I learned during my shamanism course, is that when people are born and their soul is being brought into their body, sometimes what can happen is dark entities, like how you were talking about, mm-hmm. they can interrupt that process and take that person's soul. And so the person comes into this life as a person, but there's no real energy attached to them. And a lot of these people are the same people who are in the government, who are in these police systems, who are mm-hmm. in kind of the institution parts of society. So the things that kind of control us, like, for example, you know, getting the vaccine, or like, you know, all these different boards and shit that they have for like Fulton County, like, just that's where a lot of those people go, because it gives them that type of ability to like control the population. And I don't think hollow people, which is what they're called, I don't think they have nearly the same type of like morals or ethics as what somebody who does have a soul. All
right. So when you was talking about the hollow people and the bad spirits and stuff like that, it makes me think, like, I have this theory, like, you know, there is something important about being a human. Like, it's like a gift about being a human and having a soul and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So that's why I say, like, everybody has a purpose. Do you think that we all have a purpose, and what is yours?
So I do think that everybody has a purpose, but I think that that purpose can change. I don't think that it's one thing that you're set here to do, mm-hmm. from my own personal experience. And, you know, looking at numerology, you can tell the different phases in which someone needs to learn something, and then the next phase they need to learn this and do this. So... Mm-hmm. I think life is very much so kind of impermanent in that regard. And I forgot what your question was.
I was just saying, like, so what's your purpose?
Oh, my purpose for right now, I would say my purpose is to really to inspire other people to do things and to really go after who they want to be and not doubt themselves and not feel like, hey, I don't know if I can do this, when humans at their very core are a lot tougher than what they actually think they are. Like, if a human was to go into straight up survival mode, mm-hmm. you will find the way. You're going to find a way to do a lot of different things. It's just, we don't always live under that survival mode, but still understanding that, you know, if I really put the time in and like put my energy behind this, that yes, I can be successful at this, and I can really you know, do it. And I feel like now there's a lot of self-doubt that people have at their core, mm-hmm. which is why a lot of these people who have that kind of self-doubt are the people who, you know, who will try to kind of like, people who have a lot of self-doubt generally are very materialistic. That's one thing that I've noticed. They like really, really love, like, I mean, they just really, they just have to like have like a lot of like stuff, you know what I mean? But, mm-hmm. you know, at the end of the day, I just think that that's what my purpose is, to really just to inspire people and really make them feel that they can do it. Because, I mean, you go to a basketball gym and you practice for long enough, it's like, what's going to happen? You're going to get better, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And so you can apply that same mentality to literally anything, and right. the result is going to, it has to be the same. You know what I mean? Because you, that's when people talk about the consciousness of having what it is that you want. Mm-hmm. And that's where kind of the rubber meets the road. It's all in your mind, literally. It's just you have to get through those battles mentally to continue to push forward and really get to where you're trying to get to.
I think that's a perfect way to end it up, bro.
Thank you so much for sitting down with us and opening up your home so that we can come and record with
no
you.
No problem, no problem.
And yeah, thank you so much for your time.
And who are you listening to, man?
Who am I listening to?
Listening to
Billions.
Yeah, okay. There you go. Hey, for real, thank you so much. And don't forget to follow him on Instagram at UMCoop. And then the apps is United Market app?
No, it's just United Market. At United Market. No capitals, no nothing. At United Market.
And that's it.